I'm Irini Georgioglu. It is the 19th of May 2016, and I am in the Baia at Ain Samil Farm, ready to chat with Derek Birch, who has kindly agreed to be interviewed for the oral project of the Cardmel Village Society. So thank you, Derek, very much for agreeing to be interviewed. And before we start chatting, for the benefit of the record, would you be kind enough as to tell us your full name and date of birth?
Derek Birch, 6/2/33, 6th of February, 1933, in other words.
Thank you. Were you born in Cardmel or the area around here?
I was born in Backbarrow, and I left there when I was roughly about 3 years old. And I came to live at High Newton when they were then, in about 1935, 36, they were making what they called the new road through High Newton. And my father came to work on the new road, and that's why we came to move up there.
I see. Did you have any siblings?
Yes, I'm one of five brothers and two sisters.
In those days, big families.
Big families. Yes.
Now, we met someone today and referred to you as the indestructible Derek. So, I thought it might be very interesting for the listeners to know, and for myself, to know where that came from. Because I have a feeling it has to do with your prowess on the field.
Oh, well, it wouldn't be much of football. So, I didn't play much football down here at Cardmel. So, it must have been cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Was it?
Tell us about cricket. Absolutely, that's what he said.
Oh, right. Well, what can I tell you about cricket? When I came out of the army doing my 2 years national service, I came back and I came down to play here at Cartmel. But before then, as a young lad of 14 or 15, I played at Field Broughton, had a team then.
Okay.
And then, of course, when I went in to do my 2 years national service, they broke up because they didn't have enough players. And then I came down here to Cartmel after the 2 years in 1956. And I played on there for 38 years on the Cartmel Sacred Ground, as we used to call it.
And you didn't just play cricket, did you?
Yes.
You didn't play football?
Oh, I played football only for a short while.
Ah, okay.
And my football days were very much limited because I played probably about one part of a season, end of a season, beginning of another season, and then I got an injury called cartilage problems. I eventually went into a hospital to have it attended to, and believe it or not, but I was laid in bed for 19 days when I had this operation done. And today, you can go in the morning and you can walk out in the afternoon with a cartilage problem. A lot of people do anyway. But my footballing days for Cartmel were short-lived. But my cricket didn't.
And I understand that your association with the club has been ongoing, and it still is in a way.
Well, in a way, just in a way now, because there's new people taking over, you know, a lot of them wouldn't know who I was down on the in the, because there's different people coming into play now. So a lot of them do know me, but there's a lot that don't know me.
I find that difficult to believe, because I understand that the annual dinner last Saturday, at the annual dinner of the club, your association with the club was honoured, and I believe you were presented with something by the club.
Oh,
which we have here.
So, I see what you mean now. Yes, well, when I gave over my playing days, I went on to the committee,
mm-hmm.
and was a worker for the, like everybody else, raising funds in all sorts of ways for the club. And I kept on going, and year after year, and probably, well, last March, it was 60 years ago since I came to the club from out of the army, and I'm still with it. And I ramrodded the race days for funds for the club, and I did that for 6 years, and then I've been doing working on the race course for the races with the football club for 30 years. So I've been altogether 30 years on one, 6 on another, and 60 years still working for the club.
That's wonderful. Long may it continue.
Yes.
And what was it that they gave you in acknowledgement?
Well, it was a presentation night for all the lads at end of season, for all the trophies, for their achievements, and mm-hmm. you know, everything else. And this thing came up, and well, it's unbelievable, but they made this presentation to me of this anorak with my name printed on it here, and to 1956 to 2016 with my name on it and committee. And I went up for this presentation, and honestly, I could hardly reply. I was gobsmacked, in other words, and I didn't know what the hell to say, but I just said, well, thank you, and I'll wear it with pride. And I honestly, I was taken back.
I'm sure you more than deserve it, Derek.
It's, It has honestly taken the wind out of my sails.
It's acknowledgement of all your good work.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
And it's only right.
Yeah.
And fitting. Thank you for sharing that.
That's all right.
Thank you. So, very important in the life of Cardmel, because I suspect that lots of people attended the sports days. It was one of the few things of entertainment, I suppose, in the old days, when we didn't have all the modern.
And I did say a few words afterwards, after the presentation of everybody, and I just said to them that this is where you make your friends,
mm-hmm.
and your pals for life. Yes. And there's Neil and Paul Airy of the football club. They are big friends, and they've come right through from the juniors of 8, 9 years old, right through till they went out of their age group. Then they went into senior football. They did all the time in senior football. Neil, I think, managed the second team for 9 years. Now he's managing it with Paul Airy for all this. I'm on the second generation, by the way, of children coming through.
Fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So it's not just about the sport.
It isn't just about, no, of course it isn't. You make your friends, and of course they didn't make the friends down. And they used to say down at Cartmel, you know, that if you kick one, you kick them all.
Which meant what?
Well, it meant that they all stick up for one another.
Oh, I see. If you kick a player, it's a phrase.
Yes. It's a phrase.
Yes.
To say that.
Yes.
That if you kick one, you kick them all, and it's.
So, is it safe to say that you actually build character by being associated and with sport for so many years? I'm not just talking about you, I'm talking about everybody.
Well, each individual has his own character.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some are very quiet lads, but good footballers, and others are a little bit upfront, if you know what I mean. And there's all sorts of different characters in any sport there is, and however you take it, you know, some are outward going and some are not quite so outward going, but they're still good players. Yeah, yes.
So very interesting, your sports-related life. But I was very, very interested to hear from you about your professional life. And I'm sure lots of people who listen to this interview will love to hear how the particular field in which you made your earnings, your living, has evolved over time. So tell us what you did or what you do still.
What I used to do, yes, well, I worked in a sawmill for 2 years at Backbarrow, and then my brother-in-law at that time got my father a job and my brother a job with a big building firm in Grange, which was G.F. Postlethwaite's, and they did employ a lot of men, up to about 100 at one time. But not just decorate, not there was only about 4 or 5 decorators, but there was every other trade in the building trade, because they were building the council house in that after the war.
Okay.
You see, in 1949 when I started, I think, my brother-in-law came back and said he wants an apprentice decorator. Well, I had no inkling whether to be a decorator, a plasterer, a builder, or whatever he was. And my dad looked at me, and my dad was one of these people who didn't reckon much about serving your time, for some reason or other. But anyway, he let me go and serve my time, and I continued on serving my time up to I was 21. Because the serving of your time was when you left school at 14, even though I came in it at 16. It was you came out of your time at 21, and that's
that was the apprenticeship.
That was an apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you went on to become a decorator, a fully fledged, qualified.
Yes.
Decorator.
I learnt a trade from men who were pre-war decorators, if you know what I mean, who, in a way, yes, time did mean something, but they were the quality decorators of that time, and they were really clean and tidy, and, you know, and when you were an apprentice, you were, they used to say, seen and not heard. As you know, keep your nose clean, in other words, don't be spouting up so much. And anyway, went on and I learnt my trade and continued on from that, really.
And how would you say that trade, because these days your son has inherited the family business, isn't it?
Yes, he has, yeah.
So how has, and you've seen all the progress, how has that trade changed over the years from when you started? Could you give us some examples or a feel of that?
Well, you see, when you first start being an apprentice, you are the boy. And of course you get all the menial type jobs that the men don't want to do. The boy, the lad will do that, whether it's sweeping up or brewing up or whatever, you know. And bit by bit you progress on, and you're at the top there on that ladder up there. That's your job, not me. He tradesman's down here. I'm getting the ladder work. And as it goes on, and you pick up bits and pieces, and you learn, and then they let you to do these different things, and then you start learning, and then, of course, the paper hanging really was one of those jobs which you had to have a lot of practice at. Well, I went home after I learnt and picked it up from the tradesman, and I went home and practised at home, which I think pleased my mother and my father that I could do decorating at home. Yes.
Was wallpaper similar to what it is today?
No, not
in
really.
In terms of look or how it came when you bought it?
Well,
was it ready to hang and paste
no,
it?
No, it was. It was. It had to be trimmed, and sometimes if you phoned up, but there was a machine to take off the edges, because there was a certain edge left on, so that the edges that you're going to butt up together weren't damaged, and so they put it onto a thing and they just put it through a machine and it took all the edges off. And that's how it was in those early days. And then they started, in latter years, they started trimming it before you got it, and then it was wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the edges, and then of course it was machine done, which was precise trimming for the pattern and everything else. But no, the wallpapers in the early days was floral papers, mainly floral papers, and there was some plain ones, of course. And there was always a technique of how you put it on, the things that you had to follow.
Mm-hmm.
If you walked into a room through the door and you'd look and to see where to start from, you always started from the window and you worked round. And then the idea was that if the joints weren't that good, they were facing away from you. That's
clever.
What they told me. That's what they said. And they always finished in the shortest bit above the door, usually. But that's how we were trained in, you know, to do it in that way. But the papers of quality were, oh dear me, if you got them pasted, most of them you had to get on right away because they were like tissue paper if they got wet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was, but progressed on in years. And of course, you know, decorating really is a fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Because fashion's changing clothing,
mm-hmm.
and everything else in life. But it does, and it used to be anaglypta papers, which you emulsion painted over,
mm-hmm.
and then came in, after the anagliptas, came in the blown vinyls, which was a flat back paper, which were easier to hang than what the anagliptas were. And the thing was that anagliptas, you had to paste them, let them soak for so long, and then put them on. Well, the blown vinyls, you could nearly pick them up off the board and put them on. But then the fashion changed as regards to that, because wallpapers, the anagliptas and the blown vinyls, they emulsioned them over to the shades that you wanted,
mm-hmm.
which suited your room that it's in, and also suited to your soft furnishings, which was your curtains and your cushions and other things that you had in your soft furnishings. And that's how things changed. At one time, it was a fashion to have a striped paper up above and a floral one up forming a dado with a broad band of patterned border going right round. And I think that now it's gone out of fashion. And we do come across them now and again, but it's another fashion thing. But it's very rarely now, at this stage of 2016, should I say, that we don't put as many floral papers on, unless it's a special featured wall in a big room or a room. That's how it is now.
Would you say that wallpaper came in at a time when people started perhaps having a bit more money? Because I suspect in the old days people would just paint.
Yes.
What would they use?
Well, it was distempers, just onto plain walls, really, unless they went down to, well, we used to joke about it. I wonder where they got this wallpaper from. If the customer got their own, they might have got it off Ulverston Market Day. Probably 1 and 6 pence a roll, which I think 1 and 6 pence, what is it, 7.5 pence a roll in today's money? Well, that's what we used to say, but a lot of people, things have changed so much in people's lifestyles,
mm-hmm.
and things have moved on, because then there wasn't quite so much decorating done in the winter.
Why is that?
Well, the thing is that, in my belief, that once houses got central heating in, and then people become more affluent, and then new fitted carpets came in, you see, and that's I think in my mind, then people could then decorate in winter without because the house was warm for, you know, the people didn't like to be disturbed much in those days in the winter. And that's how, I think, how it used to be.
Sorry, darling.
I don't mind it if you don't mind it.
Okay.
What do you think?
Fine. Fine.
What's that?
Fine. The phone.
Oh, well, that's normal, isn't it? Yeah, it happens on television.
It does.
Talking about prices, you mentioned the price of wallpaper at the time. How have figures changed in terms of earnings from when you started? What would you be earning when you started, after you finished your apprenticeship?
That is laughable.
In today's money, in those days,
it was simply laughable, because they said, well, the boss of the firm in Grange that I went to work for will put you on trial for 3 months, and it was 8.5 pence. Oh, wait a minute, 8.5 pence, but not today's pence. Whereas you have 5 pence, you put the P at the bottom, don't you? In them days, it was the D at the top. It was that kind of 8.5 pence, and 8.5 pence. Then after me 3 months, it went on to 11 3/farthings. Not a shilling an hour. 11 3/farthings.
An hour.
And I can't just... I've forgotten now. It was probably about... It was probably less than £2 a week, I think. I can't just remember. But we did have to put some hours in because they were working out of the district, and there's times I was putting in 49.5 hour weeks and 46.5 hour. Because them days we worked 8.5 hour days and Saturday mornings, which made it up to a 46.5 hour week. And that was a normal working week for everybody in the building trade. Yeah.
And how much would you say Neil or any other decorator would charge now per hour?
Do you know? I'm not too sure, but it's into the teens. I'm lost on what he's doing now, but it's into the teens of pounds. I don't know whether it's 16 or 17 pounds an hour now, but we're classed in the building trade. But you see, plumbers are in the building trade. Electricians are classed as in the building trade, as is bricklayers and plasterers and joiners. But the plumbers, and that, as I've heard of just of recently, are anywhere between 24 and 27 pounds an hour for plumbers and probably electricians, and they are. So things have changed quite a good bit.
In terms of clothing, what did you used to wear to go to work?
Well, you had to follow the trend, is what your tradesman you were working with was boiler suits, white boiler suit with a belt on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those fellas, well, every Monday morning, you had to have a clean pair of overalls on. Of course, you being the lad, you've got some of the dirtier jobs, but when you get older overalls, you tend to have your good ones for, you know, for the clean work. And sometimes if you get an awful dirty job, well, then you would have another... I used to have another older pair because I like to always look clean in mine. And some of the old... A lot of the old chaps there, and I got into the way of it as well, that they wore a tie, had a tie on.
Underneath the
overalls.
So what, you wore a jacket and
I had a shirt and a pullover and a boiler suit and put a tie on because you look smart going into people's houses. Because there were some class houses and customers that we went into, some beautiful houses.
Well, I was going to ask you, presumably the people who afforded decorators were the more affluent people, would you say?
One would nearly think so. Yes, I would nearly think so. Yes.
But you did commercial buildings as well?
If you call it, I don't know, it was mainly private houses when I was serving my time.
Was it?
But after I served my time, then there was, if you call hotels, yes, commercial buildings,
yes,
then it was commercial as well as private. Yes, yeah.
Any buildings that you have been involved in around the area that we might know?
I think I'm right in saying that, looking back, and tracing my memory, that I think I would, I think we would work on most hotels in Grange. Well, not probably not quite them all, but I could go around them all, and I think we've worked at them. Grand Hotel was the biggest. Have you heard of the Cumbria Grand Hotel?
No, is it there
have
now?
Have you not? Yes, it's opposite the, if you're at the bottom golf course on the Meathup Road, and you look back and you see, you can see the Cumbria Grand Hotel, and it is a big hotel. And it was bought over by some firm from up the northeast. And they're doing all sorts of repairs and what have you. And when they put the scaffold up, we painted the outside of that, and it is a big, big hotel. Biggest as ever. Biggest round here. No question.
You've worked, I believe, in a hotel in Newby Bridge.
Swan Hotel?
The Swan.
Yes.
What happened at the Swan?
What happened at the Swan?
You did a difficult room there, I understand.
A difficult room?
Yes.
What do you mean in how difficult?
Well, challenging in terms of wallpaper.
Oh, right, yes. Well, we started, I went and introduced myself down at the Swan, because wintertime, but wintertime was again those times when work was thin on the ground for inside work, because we stopped painting outside in winter, mm-hmm. when end of October comes, and then we want inside work right round till March, and that's quite a bit of time. So I went and introduced myself, but I knew one of the builder that was working down there, and I went and introduced myself, and I said, well, if you have any work inside or want anything, and I'm just up the road. And I said, I know Tony the builder. That was Tony Woodburn, who just lived down the road from me. And anyway, I had to go down and meet the management. And I got some work from them and continued on working there for 14 or 15 years, I think.
Regular maintenance work.
And painted the massive outside. It's unbelievable. But we did go on.
No.
And there was a cocktail lounge, which they had a refurbishment in the cocktail lounge. And that was a big high room. And I think on that we papered the ceiling, which it took nearly a roll of paper to paper one length on the ceiling. So we had to have a scaffold up, and we couldn't stop once we got going.
A long room. Would that be the room on this photograph?
That's the cocktail lounge. That's the completion of the cocktail lounge. And it had to be all stripped down, and it was all panelled work, all panels right around the room, as you can see. And quite a big job. And of course, with papering inside in panels, you had to be careful with a pattern paper, because you had to have the same pattern on the left side, cut through a leaf or whatever it was, exactly the same on the other side. And sometimes you had to start in the middle, the centre of the panel, so that when it worked out to the edge, then it should work out right. But it was always measured out and tested first before anything. And then we went on that and mainly what threw the end of our decorating part about it was that I said to Neil, I said, you know, I think this will go into that British Decorators Association paper hangers contest. And he looked at me and laughed, and he said, do you think so? I said, yeah. I said, why not? And that was for England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland. Was opened Solvite, the pacemakers, it was their thing. And so we did, and we put it in. And of course, after we'd done, the carpet fitters, in fact, the carpet fitters were coming in just as we were putting the last lengths of paper on. And we were working from 8 in the morning till 8 at night on that job to get it done. And anyway, they got it finished, the curtains up and the new furniture in and everything else. And I said to James and his wife, Bertlin to put a good word in, and I told him what I'd done, and I said, if anybody comes to inspect it, I said, put us a good word in, will you, James? Jill, you do the same, will you, if it comes round and you're about? Righto. Anyway, I've never heard another thing for quite some time. And it was only set off as a joke, really, but we were very proud of what we'd done. Make no mistake, it looked good. It looked really, really good. And I got a phone call one night, and it was the British Decorators Association. Would we like to attend a dinner at, I forget now what the hotel was called, in Bolton? Bolton? Well, you come because it's a prize-giving evening. So, of course, we went down. Didn't know anything, whether we'd got anything or not, until we got there. And, of course, we won a prize for the... Well, it was classed as commercial work, mm-hmm. was doing that particular big room. And it was a damn big room, I'll tell you. And then Neil got presented with this certificate.
And that would be that.
That would be that. That's what it is.
Well,
yes,
done, you.
The Solvite, yes, prize, yes. And we were quite proud of it. And yes. we did put it in the local paper. And we got a lot of work from it.
And that's you and the Neil?
That's Neil holding the framed certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And Jill and James Bertlin on the right-hand side and myself on the left. So there you were.
Well done.
But I always had a thing about decorating, you know. And I always used to say to customers, what isn't good enough in my house isn't good enough in yours. If something isn't right, it will be right. And that's how I used to, that's how I built up my business.
Mm-hmm.
That, because quality was the top thing that we were after. Didn't matter if he wanted another coat of something at our expense. We did it because I wanted it to look as though it was in my own house. So they have what we were out. We were quality. And I have to say it like that. It's not bragging.
No, no.
It's true.
I'm sure. And who chose colour schemes or papers? Or was it the client? Did you sometimes recommend things? Or did you even have outside help?
Well, the normally in a private house we'd take pattern books to customers, and if they asked for advice, we would pass our comments about it, and sometimes we would go on with chosen the paper and they're in there, etc., etc. You measure up and everything else, and sometimes they would ask, you know, whether what do you think? Well, I said either of those or either of those three are really nice papers. But I used to exercise my rights to say, just in case, I used to say, well, don't forget, my dear, when we've done it and long gone down the road, you have to live with it. We don't. And we used to laugh about it. But in the main, it turned out all right, mostly. Except one customer, which was up Kent's Bank, and I think her stepson was in Lord of the Rings. If you can ever remember who that chap was, you'll remember him. Although I never saw him, and I said to her, and I took some anaglyptic paper there. I said, don't forget. I said, if you're choosing your papers at that distance from your eyes onto the table, I said, you're best to put the pattern further away to see what it looks like, because that's where you're viewing it from. Mm. You're not looking at your wallpaper at that distance, 18 inches from the... And no, she chose her anaglyptic paper that she wanted, and we did it all and did it and it looked great. And then she turned to me afterwards and looked at me and head on one side. She said, I do wish we'd chosen that stronger one. But that's how things go. But where it's, we'll say the commercial work, hotels, which we did at Ainsham Manor hotel just up the road here, the Swan Hotel, and I think there was one or two more. I've sat round a table with different people of the hotel, and because in the hotels there, the people that were responsible for that area that were decorating, they were involved in the redecoration or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And of course it came about that one said, well, I don't like pink. And somebody would say, well, I don't like that green. And nobody could fully agree. And you were just going round and round in circles. So I said, I'll tell you what the best thing to do. I said, we'll test it out anyway. And I said, and we'll get one, we'll get, in fact, we'll get two companies. We'll get Dulux paints. And I said, and we'll get Leyland paints at different times, of course. And I said, and we'll get them to make up a colour scheme, a balanced colour scheme. And they'll give us samples, and sometimes they would do two or three. And I think they did three up there at the Ainsham Manor. And then you can choose which you think looks balanced and looks right. And that got me off the hook a lot of times when I got them to do it, the companies to do it. And they did it for free of charge if you're using their paints.
So that was a service they were offering?
Yes.
I don't think they offer it now, maybe, do they?
I don't know. Never. We don't do as much of that now.
They
you
have
see.
All the colour charts.
Oh, they have all the colour charts.
Down to
yes.
you.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
How about things like health and safety, which today stops people doing so much? And I saw a photograph of you very high up on a ladder yeah. doing something outside the building. Were you aware of that? Was there much restriction?
Wasn't in then. You had to have a certain amount of safety built into your system, if you know what I mean. You had to be careful what you were doing. And if you... massive ladder was up quite a good way. You usually had the apprentice standing on the bottom of the ladder. But then things have changed dramatically in these latter few years, where it's scaffolding now. You've got to be on a scaffold to do a lot of work. In fact, I think if you read through the smaller, well, I'm not saying the smaller print, but some of the smaller print where I think a ladder has to be what we call footed by someone else on the bottom of it, over 2.5 meters high, and that's only 7'6" and just over, and you're supposed to have, well, I mean, that's ridiculous because you've got two men doing one job. But if you're on a scaffold and there's a lot of gable ends and a lot of what we call roof work, which is all the spouts, the gutters, and fairly high up. It's a saving in a way, because on a ladder, you're having to do what you can reach at either side. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to come down and get somebody on a big ladder, move over your ladder, and you're up again. You're up and down like a yo-yo. Mm-hmm. And you know about it by the end of the day if you've had been on ladders all day long. Your legs are tired since the... And it's, you get round your work quicker. So it isn't... The cost of the scaffold isn't all the cost, if you know what I mean, because mm-hmm. you're cutting down your time of... Work hours, yeah.
Yes, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you have people working for you at any one point, or were you just, was it you and later on your son?
No. I worked on my own for the first year, and then I was getting busy and busier and busier. And there was a chap used to come round every Friday. What the hawker, you know what I mean by a hawker? The chap who comes round door to door selling the fruit and veg and that sort of thing. And his son was leaving school. Well, I said, just harness him up, I said, and send him up to me. Just off the cuff type of thing. And anyway, he came up to me, and he worked for me for 22 years. But in amongst that time, I employed another two chaps. But there was really, most of the time there was four of us. I did take on a few extra that didn't have much work to do in winter, which I told you just before, when I was working at the Swan Hotel, because they closed for about 12 days. And we did all the rooms that the visit, you know, the customers used. Mm-hmm. And then other places that could be put off, we used to do them when the hotel had opened. So we used to employ probably 7 or 8 or 9 sometimes, just for those few weeks at the Swan Hotel. But mainly it was 4 employees. 4 with myself, of course.
Yes. Yeah. So what happened over time that has resulted in Neil now working by himself? Are there more painters and decorators around?
Well, Neil has himself and 2 other lads.
Oh, he does?
Yes. And one of those lads came to me when he was leaving school. And I think this is his 32nd or 33rd year working for us.
Must be good employers.
And so I don't think we're doing anything wrong. We must treat them all right. And one other old chap came to us and he was with us for 16 years. And from when he was about 15, he retired here from us when he was 16. A nice chap and all. George, he was very good. George Rollinson, he was very good. But other than that, Neil is just, he prefers to just have a smaller staff than I did on. Yeah, yeah.
When you look back to, I know it might not have been what you intended to do, but this is what you did. But do you have any regrets that that's what you did all your life? Would you have rather been something else?
Well, no, not. I had no really any inclination to do, as I said at the beginning, I had no really any inclination to be a decorator, let alone
That's
any
right.
other trade. And once I got into it, and what pleased me about decorating was that you can stand back and look at it, as I told my apprentices. You stand back and have a look at what you've done and say, I did that and I'm proud of it. And that will make you a good tradesman if you look at your work that you've done and pleased with it. That's what you want. That's how I did. That was my thoughts.
I think this is a very good point to finish.
Go on then.
That's all.
Right.
It's wonderful to have lived your life and
yeah.
done something that you always felt good about and proud.
Yeah. Oh, I always have done. Yes, yes. I would say that I would do it again if I had to. If someone asked me to, what would you do again? I think I would do the same again. But we've had some fantastic places to
very
work
good.
At. Been very good.
Thank you very much,
right,
Derek.
Thank you for asking me.
Thank you.